The second part of this program is critical to you realizing the magnitude, the power, and the consistency your secret wealth principle can produce for you. But it's only possible for you to do if you fully understand and appreciate the fact that all the principles that I have used to create the secret wealth success principle were based on business experiences and successes I have achieved with over 10,000 different types of companies. What's this mean to you? I'm going to teach you how to apply the same principles to achieve your own secret wealth. With that said, now, let's progress. Let's start with side six. Getting people to buy you, your ideas, your product or service. Okay, going back to the realization and the understanding that you are a company selling a product or service. Now let's get them to buy you. How do we get your customer? How do we get others? How do we get your employer? How do we get your spouse to buy you and your product and your service? You've got to realize that people need inducement. Now let's talk about some of the realities of what helps people make positive or definitive buying decisions. There are a lot of different ways to do it, but one of the most interesting ways that I have found is inducing them with an ethical bribe. By that I mean a premium advantage, something above and beyond the mere commodity that comes over to them by doing business or by acquiring the product or service. Well, let me tell you a little story about how I did something like that for a health club one time. And it may give you some great ideas that you can direct in not only your business or your employment, but maybe also your personal life. One time I had a men's store that was struggling on how to get people to buy from them. It was a downward time in the economy, and they're trying very ardently to boost business. And I thought, well, how could you make buying clothing exciting and advantageous for people who were becoming very, very conservative in a downward economy? And what I asked myself was, what else would get them excited? If somebody could buy something and in essence it cost them nothing because they got something else that was more perhaps immediately of interest or concern to them, maybe that might be the inducement that would make them take the buying commitment. So I asked myself, well, what might be really appealing to people right now? And I did some studies and I read some articles and some psychological surveys, and I realized that more and more people in the downward economy were turning to getting their minds and their bodies healthy. There was a big influx of people joining health clubs. So I thought, aha, here's an idea. A health club has a very high perceived value. In other words, if you join a health club for a year, it could cost $200, $500, $1,000. The cost to the health club of actually providing or fulfilling the health club service can be honestly zero, particularly if you go to that health club during the off hours and all you do is use the facilities that are already there. The only time a health club really incurs extra expense is if they have so many members that they have to expand their facilities, or if they have so many members that they have to expand their equipment. So I went to a health club and I pointed out to them that if I brought to them thousands of new members who would only use the facilities in the off hours when they were absolutely empty, it wouldn't cost them anything, but it would bring to them potentially thousands of people who at the end of that initial period would be inclined, if they got used to using the facilities, to rejoin and pay them a lot of money. They found that appealing, and I persuaded them to let me buy from them in bulk thousands and thousands of memberships that had a value of $100 a piece for 75 cents. I took those memberships and went to the retail clothing store and showed them how for 75 cents I had just given them a $100 value they could offer anybody when they bought $100 worth of clothes. So we started a very simple process. The retailer offered anybody who bought $100 worth of clothes, $100 membership in the health club. Thousands of people bought. They paid 75 cents to get thousands of $100 sales that they never would have had before. The health club got thousands and thousands of new members for virtually nothing. as far as marketing costs. So they got all kinds of customers for nothing, and in fact got paid 75 cents instead of losing money on the acquisition. And at the end of 6 months, a very large portion of those people ended up renewing their membership and paying directly to the health club hundreds of dollars for another year. What's the lesson? The lesson is you've got to ask yourself, what can I add to my offer or my proposition that makes the value of my product or service so much more appealing or so much more valuable or so much more desirous that in spite of any other reticence a customer might have, they're more compelled to buy from me than not. Now I'm going to teach you a series of proven money-making strategies that I have used many, 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 many times over the years to make large, quick, and continuous profits for customers and clients of all kinds. Many of these can be converted and modified into helping you achieve your own personal goals other than wealth building. With your new secret wealth mindset, you'll find yourself open to a variety of possibilities. I'm going to start off now by explaining to you the three primary strategies I use when I work with businesses, and then we're going to evaluate how to modify them or adapt them to all aspects of your life. They are risk reversal, guarantees, and referrals. Let's talk about risk reversal and its application in a business context first, because I think it'll be so evident that you'll easily see its implication to all aspects of your life. When any two parties come together to do business or conduct any mode of commerce, one side is always asking the other side to assume more or all the risk in the transaction than the other. To the extent you can reduce the risk from the other side in the transaction, you have lowered and eliminated the barrier that restricts or keeps them from doing business with you. Now, there is a story, and I'll use it as an example here. A man wanted to buy a pony for his 10-year-old daughter. There were two ponies for sale in his city. He went to the first pony owner and said he'd like to buy the pony. The man responded, "Sure. Pay me for the pony, take it home. If you don't like it, bring it back in a day or two, and I'll give you back your money." The gentleman who wanted the pony for his daughter thought about it and thought, well, that's not so bad. But he went ahead and he visited the other gentleman. The other gentleman with the pony responded very differently. He said the following, "My pony is kind and gentle and loving and is extremely good with children your daughter's age. But I would say that it's my pony and I'm trying to sell it. I would like to suggest the following. Let me bring my pony to your home. Put the pony in your stable. Let me bring you a month's supply of oats and hay. Let me send my groom to your stable every day and make sure there's no mess. Allow your daughter to ride the pony as if it were hers for the entire month. At the end of a month, I'll come to your home, and one of two things will occur. Either the pony and your daughter will fall in love with each other, and you'll see that every word I have uttered is the truth. And if that's the case, I'll ask you to pay me for the pony. Or, for whatever reason, the two of them will not get along, and I will gladly take the pony back, clean out the stable for you with my people, and there'll be no obligation on your part whatsoever. Which of the two do you think the man bought?" It's axiomatic. He bought the pony from the man that eliminated and took away the element of risk. That simple realization can empower you to a level of achievement and a level of wealth creation you cannot imagine. Imagine, for example, going to a prospective employer. Imagine 200 other people going for the interview, but you being the one person who says, "I don't want to be paid until I've worked for you for 3 weeks or 2 weeks or a month," and then you denominate a very specific result or performance outcome they should expect. If I failed to do that, I wouldn't expect to be paid for my time, nor would I be expected to be on the payroll. And I'll give you a written warrant to that effect. Do you think maybe if you did this, you might have an inside edge on getting the job? The same thing with wanting a raise. What if you said, I want a raise, but I want you to accrue it for 6 months. And until and unless I demonstrate tangibly that I add to the company a multiple of 10 times or more that amount in measurable improvement or savings or profitability or productivity, I won't ask for the checks to be paid to me? Do you think maybe they'd give you that? Let's talk about also how this applies to building friendships and relationships. If you can contribute unhedgingly to building a new relationship, if you can give, if you can serve, if you can contribute, but you don't ask or expect anything in return, and it's clear you're doing it selflessly and without reciprocal expectation, you lower the resistance. You get people to open up to you. I'm a big believer in risk reversal myself, as is evident by the way that you were able and offered to buy this program. First of all, we don't want you to pay us unless the program performs for you. And we just basically mentioned it again because it's that important to us. In my professional activities, where I deal with people and they pay me $3,000 an hour, I take away all the risk of the transaction. I should probably explain to you how I do it because it's pretty exciting and it may give you another illustration of the possibilities you can incorporate into your own life situations. When I conduct hourly consultation for $3,000, somebody sends me a check, and my normal manner of conduct is I do not deposit the check until after I have engaged in the first 15 minutes of the transaction. At the end of 15 minutes, I will normally stop the consultation and say, Mr. Client, if you have not already gotten at least $3,000 worth of value, I am honor-bound to return your money. Do you want it? I've done that probably 500 times, and I've given back two checks. Now, let me allay a fear you might be gripped with and reduce the clutches of emotion that are tightening the nape of your neck. No, you're not going to lose everything. No, the world isn't going to collapse. First of all, in your world, there is a risk reversal being conducted anyhow. If you don't perform for your employer, guess what? You don't keep your job or you don't get a raise. If you don't perform in your marriage, and I'm talking predominantly from an emotional level, but you can take any implication you want to this, you probably don't stay in the marriage. If you don't perform as a business owner to your customer, you probably don't keep the customer. If they are dissatisfied, they probably ask for their money back and you refund it anyhow. I advocate formalizing and making the risk reversal a strong and a primary condition of transacting business or doing the transaction or selling your product or service. That's the first point. Number two, you don't have to if you are the slightest bit uncomfortable or concerned about the value or the clear benefit of the result you offer or your product or service offers. You don't have to initially make the switch over to that in all aspects of your life. You can try it out in a very non-threatening, very low risk, very limited test environment. You try it one time. If you're looking for a job, you don't try it with every employer. You try it for one. And if it works and you stay on the job for 10 days and you get fired, you ask what's wrong with this picture. It could be that your promise is too big, or don't be offended, the value of your product is lower than your estimate. So you work on it and then you stop and you evaluate. But the truth of the matter is this. If your product or service is of value and you can be focused on making that value clear and more advantageously known to others, the odds of many people exercising on their right of return for your risk reversal is very low. I have done this and implemented risk reversal programs with over 10,000 companies. It is rare. And this is one of the most fundamental parts of your secret wealth. Why? Because almost no one is willing to step up to the line and guarantee the performance of themselves or their product or their company. The person, the company, the employee that sees and seizes the opportunity of taking the risk out of the transaction for others normally is the beneficiary of such incredible wealth and prosperity and richness and success, I cannot even do it justice. All I ask you to do is have faith in me, because you got 30 days to test this out. Put it to a test. Try it in some aspect of your own life, knowing the following. In the beginning, because it's so awkward and you're probably a bit apprehensive, you may not articulate or execute it with absolute certainty and absolute confidence, so you may have to try it a number of times until you get it right. That's why I recommend the first couple of times, apply it in situations where if you're rejected or if it doesn't work right, it's not going to be the end of the world. I believe that the whole world is on a performance-based, guarantee-based operating basis, whether they acknowledge it or not. It's pretty certain that you are indirectly guaranteeing your performance when you purvey yourself in any form as a commodity. Because if you don't, the question is, what are the terms of the guarantee? I think that's something you've got to evaluate for yourself. But the higher the level of guarantee and corresponding risk reversal you can offer others, normally, the more success. I think that there is emerging in society today an overlooked opportunity and a necessity to recognize that human nature has changed. People have become apprehensive, skeptical. They become reticent about making any kinds of instant decisions on any issues that require a major commitment of effort, energy, emotion, finances. What I advise and recommend business people today, selling any kind of product or service that is high priced or of a critical applications nature, is to understand that people are testing you. What you say and what you do must be congruent. The only way they can validate that is over a bit of time. Anybody can come with a great sales presentation. Anybody can make promises of a great result. But do you deliver it? And if that customer doesn't directly buy, are you consistent in your conviction and commitment to contribution and creating a value to them, even when they don't immediately patronize you? That's the silent test that society is administering on almost every one of us all the time. And lamentably, most of us fail. The people who understand that the secret wealth principle is a process of consistency. It's a lifetime commitment to service and to others. It's a refocusing of your attention on how you can enrich other people's lives and situations. And it's an understanding that that enrichment is not necessarily predicated on getting an immediate reciprocal benefit. So that if you approach somebody and you befriend somebody, they may not immediately befriend you, but you still have committed yourself to consistently be there for them, or be there for your employee, or extend yourself. Let me give you another example of a real-life guarantee in business, actually in the professions, which people don't realize is a business. Some of these people don't realize it, but they are businesses and they have to operate as such. But had a pretty incredible success that we realized for a very, very great and very wonderful psychiatrist friend of mine a few years ago. And I'd like to share it with you because it illustrates an application of what we're talking about. The man was quite a specialist in dealing with areas of depression and despondency. He was a wonderful, sensitive man who had such an engaging and a sympathetic and a compassionate and empathetic style and presence that he almost always successfully mentally rehabilitated his patients and produced enormously wonderful results and outcomes. He came to me because he had a very large practice, and it was successful, but it cost him a lot. He had a number of clinicians working for him, and he wanted to grow it, but he wanted to grow it in a tasteful, in a non-promotional manner. So I said, well, let's look at a question. Where's the biggest influx of potential patients going to come from who you can do the most good for, who need your service, and who are evident to a certain kind of source? And he said, well, much of my business comes from referring agencies, social services, hospitals, school systems, and the like. And he was not an inexpensive psychiatrist. I think his services were $150 an hour. And we evaluated the flaw in that kind of a situation, and the flaw is pretty much this. The first time anyone possibly seeking professional mental health services goes and meets with a psychiatrist or a psychologist, it's a very awkward process. And most of these professionals, they transact their services in increments of 45 minutes or 55 minutes or an hour. It's very rarely longer than that. And the psychiatrist and I evaluated and determined that it was not uncommon that in the first introductory session with a prospective patient, nothing of any consequence occurred for half of the session because the patient was already depressed when they came to him, or the prospective patient. They were distrusting, they were awkward, they weren't open. Adding insult to injury, they were sitting there becoming more depressed, racking up $150 an hour, being inhibited. And I said, well, let's just talk about this concept of risk reversal. What would make it much more comforting for the patient or prospective patient to come to you, and even much more comforting for the referral agency to be eager to refer qualified patients to you? The suggestion that I gave him was very simple. I said, if I were you, what I would do is I'd approach every organization who had knowledge of and access to these qualified people in need of services like yours, and I'd tell them the following. I would say that you had evaluated the whole process and determined that there was something wrong with the picture when somebody had to spend $150 an hour on the first hour just to determine whether they could get help or not, and it defeated the whole purpose, and you didn't want to contribute to increasing their negativity or their despondency. You wanted to basically contribute to their improved mental health. So you had made a decision that you wanted to personally buy anybody who might benefit from your services the first hour of your time without any risk or obligation to go forward. Your basis behind that was that in that hour, because the prospective patient hadn't had to pay, they would be more open. They would lower their skepticism, their resistance, and open up and talk more. And you could determine whether you were right for them and could help them, and whether they were right for you and could be the kind of a qualified patient you could do the most good for and with. No one had ever done that before. When he offered that and explained it the way I suggested to all the referring mental health organizations, they opened up the spigots. He got them to be discriminating and only refer people who were indeed qualified, but his practice in an 18-month period grew from $500,000 to $2.5 million strictly from that single device. It was that powerful. It really has application and implication in everybody's life. A point of clarification. It is essential, vital, and critically important that you deliver at least what you promise, and preferably more than you promise, whenever you use risk reversal, for a number of reasons. Whatever application you use your secret wealth for, you're not vying for a single transaction. The buying relationship is ongoing. It is continuous. Even if you think it's only for one transaction, there are so many residual aspects to the transaction that you fail to recognize. In a job, it's promotions, it's raises, it's the opportunity to buy into the business. In your business, it's either the repeat patronage. You'll remember earlier in this program, we talked about the three ways to grow a business. In a relationship, it's every day. You don't basically make a sale and then drop the ball and say, well, I've got the relationship. I don't have to continually perform tomorrow or next week or next month or next year. You are, whether you acknowledge it or not, vying or engaging in a continuous relationship. And the most immediate outcome you're vying for is repeat transactions from that direct customer. The subsequent benefit and payoff is referrals. Now, obviously, referrals aren't something you might want to deal with in a relationship, but in any other application, it's a very powerful and a very critical element of recognition. Let's talk about a referral system. Let's talk about business, and then let's draw an analogy to your life. In business, when you go out and invest in activities and programming to develop customers, there is an expenditure. That expenditure is invested in the relationship you establish. Keep in mind, relationship is a key undercurrent of the thread upon which we build your secret wealth principle. Once you establish that relationship, your goal is to get leverage on yourself and every asset in your company. An asset in the company are the relationships you've built, because those relationships are connected through all kinds of other relationships to all sorts of additional people and customers that could be referred to you. Most people are very passive and very assumptive. They delude themselves to believe if they're just good people and they just got a nice product that they're going to get all these people to be referred to them. That is rarely the case. Remember, human beings today are very busy. They are not as evidently aware of your needs as they are keenly aware of their own. They are consumed, obsessed, immersed in absorption about what in the world they're going to do to fill their own self-serving needs, to satisfy their own desires, to eliminate their own fears. Unless it's accidental, very rarely is it the case that they can stand clear and sober and look at you and say, wow, I better be mindful of helping him or helping her get what they want. They don't normally. You've got to set up a system to establish that formally and strategically and continuously and subtly for yourself. The best system that I recommend is integrating at the very beginning of the transaction the fact that you expect, want, and build your business on referrals so that people will be oriented and acclimated and habituated to understanding and looking within their own relationships at and for other people who could easily be referred to you. Referrals are very profitable for two reasons. Number one, they rarely have to be sold. They've already been pre-sold by the referrer. Number two, the quality of their transaction is normally larger and it lasts longer and is more profitable than the normal type of a transaction you could get. Let me draw a life analogy. If you are not married and you have not found your significant other, having a great relationship with people who respect you and know that you look to them because they are the quality of people who represent the quality you want to associate with. If they know from the beginning that you hope and expect and respect that they can refer to you other people who you might be able to enter into romantic relationships with, then most probably they will go out of their way to do that for you. If in your job you know that the people above you know that you are looking to grow yourself, they will refer you whenever openings occur. If people you work with know you are aggressive, I'm talking about vendors, suppliers, customers, they will look to you for opportunities outside your business when they become evident. The key is to build a referral system that works for you in all aspects of your life. I'd like to give you some examples of how a couple of people I respect have built referral systems and how I have used them to help people who are important in my life, and let you draw your own possibilities from there. When I say referrals, you could just as easily substitute the word networking. It's the same thing depending on the application. Now let me start with a man who's probably had the most profound impact on what I believe and also on the people I've been able to help teach this principle to. He's a dentist in Australia. His name is Paddy Lund, P-A-D-D-Y-L-U-N-D, and he's a remarkable man. In Australia, the average dentist works 60 hours a week and makes $60,000. But that $60,000 is Australian, which is about $45,000 U.S., so they're not lavishly paid and they're enormously hardworking. Paddy Lund works 23 hours and makes approximately $400,000. How does he do it? Well, he does it through a number of strategies that integrate together that are based on two keen principles that are offshoots of your secret wealth process. Number one is he reveres himself and the value he brings to his client. A patient in Australia is referred to as a client. Number two, he makes a referral process a condition of transacting business with his dentistry. powerful and breakthrough concept. Let me illustrate. First of all, when most people go to a dentist, the dentist is only too eager to have them as a patient. Patty Lynn took a different approach. He used to be moderately successful, but he was miserable. He had a very unhappy existence because half of his patients were miserable people who didn't like dentists, didn't like him, didn't keep their appointments. It didn't work. He made a conscious decision that if he was going to live, just live, and then live happily, he had to be, because he was doing business with a quality of people, patients or clients, if you will, that respected him and the value he contributed to their lives, and people he enjoyed on a basis that were equivalent to being rich, dear, valued friends. The first thing he did was he eliminated all the marginal or the unqualified or the unsuitable patients that he had accepted over the years. They were shocked. Then he changed the whole strategy of his practice. He locked the front door and put a sign out saying, by referral only, and I'm sorry, if you come to this practice for normal dental assistance, we cannot render it to you unless and until you're referred by an existing patient. However, if you've got an emergency, push the buzzer. It was a locked door. We'll try to find you another dentist. He took out the typical waiting room and the front desk, and instead he created 5 wonderful little salons, like booths in a restaurant. He got a part-time chef, and he started a process that when any new patient came to him, he would sit down with them first and have a cup of tea. And he made it a point that he would invest himself to engage them as a friend and learn all about their life, their family, their hopes, their dreams, their values, those things that were important far past the mere area of one little aspect of their mouth. Then when he sat down with a new patient, he would go through a very simple process where he would explain to them the basis upon which he felt the two sides should be transacting this business. The first thing he would tell them, he would help them frame exactly what they should expect from him as their dentist. And that expectation was very specifically explained. First, they should expect him to be timely and professional and never render any pain or discomfort. Second, when they had an appointment, they should expect to get into his offices within 2 minutes of the allotted time, unless there was a horrible emergency, at which time he would pre-alert them. Third, they should expect him to deal with them and their dental problems the same way he would an important member of his own family, with respect, with reverence for the outcome, for the quality and the integrity of the mouth and the cosmetic attributes. Fourth, they should be so satisfied in dealing with him that they should be eager and delighted to introduce him and his services to their most valued friends. Then he would stop and he would tell them what he expected of them. What he expected was very simple. A, if they made an appointment, he expected them to keep it on time. B, he expected them to be more than a patient because they were more than a patient to him. They were a dear and valued friend, or he didn't want to have a relationship. Remember what I said about relationship. If they didn't want someone to care about them far beyond the limitations of just their oral health, he suggested they find a discompassionate dentist and he would not be offended. Third, after he had rendered the service, he expected them to pay the bill then and there. He didn't want to be their banker. I should point out he has no receivables. Fourth, and this is the brilliance of it, if he performed as he promised and they got satisfactory results and they saw him demonstrate his ability to provide them with a superior benefit, he expected, if they didn't, he didn't want to keep their money and he would give them a refund and politely relinquish them as a patient. If they did, and they recognized and appreciated the value, the contribution, and the unique and self-serving benefit he brought to them, he expected them to immediately contact at least 2 and up to 5 of their valued friends, relatives, and coworkers, and refer them to him. And by referring, he didn't mean give him the names for him to call. He meant he wanted them to go home and get on the phone and call them. Now, the interesting thing about this is that he works on a referral waiting list. He'd put them on a list that he couldn't even accommodate for months or for a half a year. Now, how was he able to do that? He was able to do that because he evolved to the point that he understood and redenominated and recognized the extreme and profound value his unique approach to dentistry rendered to his patient, and he clearly and he continuously communicated and demonstrated and educated and informed them. He made his own rules, and it worked. Now let me review and summarize what I'll call a four-step system for gaining and sustaining referrals or networking. It's very simple. Number one, remind people the value and the result of what your actions or your efforts or your service has meant to them on a benefit or result basis. Number two, let them know that you feel that your greatest contribution is continuing doing more of that, not expending your efforts in trying to do the accessing or the meeting or the networking on your own, because that doesn't allow you to make the greatest contribution to others because you divert your time. Number three, demonstrate to others how and why it's to their best interest and self-serving advantage and responsibility and almost moral obligation if they have within their lives friends or customers or clients or associates of any kind who should and would and could benefit from the contribution or the value of the service you bring, to introduce them to you because their life will be enhanced and enriched because of it. And if those people are important to your friend, they should refer them to you because their lives will be enriched. And finally, ask a favor that they will extend it. Show them how you will appreciate in the process and how they will do themselves a service. And frankly, they'll feel better about it because they'll know that they enhanced, that they benefited other people too. The people you'll touch and yourself in the process.